For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. All right, let's begin. So we last left our story. We are on page 138. We are at the stage. We're just going through the story, raising all of the questions and problems and interesting elements of the story of Yaakov and Esav. We're in episode 2, Stealing the Brachos. We completed last week verses 30, 31, 32 in that area, in which Yaakov has received the blessings from his father Yitzchak after having fed him. He brought him the wine, and then he left. And in a quick review of what exactly were the blessings, we had the blessings in verses 28, receiving the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth, which seemed to be blessings that he received of physical prosperity, abundant grain and wine. So he's given dew, fatness, wine, grain. And then verse 29, people will serve you and regimes will prostrate themselves to you, seeming to be a national blessing that you will be a national power among the nations of the world. And then that concludes with your mother's sons will prostrate themselves to you. And not only will you be a national power, but within your family, you'll be the man. And your mother's sons will bow down before you as well. So it was a very inclusive blessing as far as physical blessings, as far as power and prestige in the world and in your family. And we noted there was but one thing missing in the blessing. Anyone remember?
Spiritual.
Some type of spiritual component of the blessing that Abraham himself had received. The blessing of the land, the blessing of children, the blessing that, those are the two blessings which always followed Abraham. It was given to Yitzchak, the blessing of you will inherit this land, you and your children afterwards, who will be as numerous as the stars or the dust of the earth. Some form of being numerous. There are, and each one of the fathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, received a different nature of that blessing, whether or not it was like stars or sand or dust. But there's some form of that together with the land that is not included in this blessing. That we noted. Yaakov then exits stage left, and that left us where we are up to, in which the drama unfolds. We mentioned there were two moments of drama in the story. The one we saw last week was when Yaakov is asked by his father, come here, let me feel you. That if you were scripting a screen, a movie, or a play, that's the moment of truth. That's the moment that Yaakov had said, I'm worried about, he's going to ask to feel me, and he does. Yaakov was right. And he feels him, and he says, Hakol kol Yaakov hayadayim idei Esav. The voice is Yaakov, in the way that you're speaking, not the sound of the voice, because we know that he wasn't able to decipher from that, but the way you're speaking sounds like Yaakov, but you do indeed feel like Esav. Anyway, Yaakov, we learned, exits stage left, as I mentioned, and in comes Esav. The beginning of the drama, let's follow that. Let's read this story and see how this story develops. Let's start with verse Lamed Aleph 31. Vayas Gam hu matamim. Esav had also made matamim delicacies. And he brought them to his father. And he said to his father, Yakum avi v'yoychal mitzed b'no. Let my father arise and eat of his son's game. So that your soul will bless me. Comments, questions on this verse?
Well, father rise makes me think that the father was lying down.
Okay, sounds like his father was certainly in some position of where he would need to rise in order to eat. Good. Anything else?
Yes.
Clearly. What's that? Okay, Esav picks up. Now, who said this first? Where did he get that phrase, that your soul shall bless me? That's what Yitzchak had said to him, right? Isaac had said to Esav, feed me so that my soul might bless you. Who missed that phrase? Right, when Rivka says that to Yaakov and pulls him aside and says, I want you to make your father a dish so that he can bless you. She does not use that phrase. She just says, so that he can bless you, and ignores that phrase, so that his soul. But when Yitzchak requests that of Esav, and when Esav now comes in, that phrase is there in order that your soul shall bless me. Excellent. Any other interesting points on this pasuk?
It's son's game.
Yeah, say again?
Yeah, let my father rise and eat of his son's game.
Good.
It doesn't mention a name.
Excellent. In other words, I would put that into the category, which we've seen that there's a ton of pronouns in this story. We're always defining relationships. We're not naming people by name, but the Torah has over and over and over again said, this one's son, that one's son, the father, instead of calling them by name. And here you have an example where Esav himself walks in and says, eat of your son's game. He should have just said, eat of my game. But he says, eat of your son's game, which is interesting when you contrast that to Yaakov's food, which was not his son's game. It was really Yitzchak's wife's game. But here Esav, not knowing that, of course, just stresses that. There's another interesting point here. Contrast that. What were you
going
to say?
Well, going back to your soul, in verse 19 on the previous page, Yaakov, when he spoke to his father,
he does say that.
He does say it.
Excellent, right? As we pointed that out, let's flush that out. It's very interesting in the sense of Yitzchak does ask that of Esav. Rivka does not say that when she talks to Yaakov. Yaakov himself comes up with that and says that your soul shall bless me, and then we find Esav himself repeating that. Contrast Esav's request of Yaakov, of his father to eat, from Yaakov's request of his father to eat. Yaakov is in verse 19, Esav is here in verse 31. What's the difference in the way that they speak?
Identifying himself.
Please, excellent. Everyone see that? Look back at contrast verses 19 to verse 31. In 19, when Yaakov is speaking, he says, I have done as you have told me. Rise up, please sit and eat of my game. The word na on your Hebrew side, kum na shiva v'achla, and Esav uses the word you come avi, get up, without saying the word, please, let my father rise and eat. He just says, let my father, as opposed to please. Now that has a lot to do with Yitzchak picking up and saying, this is the voice of Yaakov. There's a way of speaking, there's a choice of words and a tone that is different, as you see evidenced here between the way Yaakov requests of his father to eat as Esav. Did I make a bracha on this already?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I can absolutely no recollection. Not that I wasn't concentrating fully and with a lot of intent when I made it. I just happened to forget.
Aren't you not supposed to say it if it's something you usually do?
I say what?
Well, that happens to me sometimes. I forget if I said the blessing.
Right.
But if it's my custom to say it, should I not say it?
If you have a doubt whether or not you said it, you should not say it again.
Yeah, that's what I was
trying to inform you. Okay. That's correct. That only applies on brachas before food, on benching. If you washed and ate and need to bench, then you would say it again, because that's a biblical requirement to bench. So there, when we're in doubt, we would bench again. On brachas before foods, which are only rabbinic, when you have a doubt, you wouldn't. How can you forget if you bench?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a little bit longer, but it's been known to happen. I can attest to that. I'm sorry?
About
what?
For thunder and lightning.
If you forgot? Yeah, don't make it again if you're not sure.
No. You said with benching because you've washed. What about after blessings for things other than
bread? No, only on bread. Okay. Only benching, yeah. Okay, so that's verse 31. So Esav comes in. We have a number of interesting comments on the verse. The Torah narrates that he also made matzah-amim. He also made these delicacies. He brings it. He tells his father to get up in order that his soul shall bless him. Yomer lo Yitzchak aviv, verse 32. So Yitzchak, his father, said to him, and again, I'm just stressing over and over and over again, we find the relationship amongst the characters, even though we've seen it so many times. Mi ata, asks Yitzchak, who are you? Vayomer, Ani bincha v'charcha Esav. And Esav responds, I am your son, your firstborn, Esav. Now, when he asks, who are you? We saw the same question that Yitzhak asked Yaakov when he walked in. The first question that he asks is, who are you? Now, there we said, that's a strange question, because the person who's bringing you this fresh, it's exactly what you asked for. You should be expecting him. Here already, we understand the question, like, what do you mean somebody's coming in and telling me to eat? I just did this. So Yitzhak here asks, who are you? And how does Esav respond? Ani bincha v'charcha Esav. I am your son, your firstborn, Esav. Mm-hmm. Questions, comments?
The same thing.
So go back and contrast this to verse 18. In verse 18, when Yaakov walked in, we have a similar dialogue, but there's one word that's different. Couple things that are different. Okay. That's 19. Go back a verse. Let's read verses 18 and 19. This is 18. Everyone back where I am? This is Yaakov walking in. Vayavo el aviv, he came to his father. Vayomer avi, and he said, Father. Vayomer, hineni, he said, here I am. Mi ata bini, who are you, my son? Vayomer Yaakov el aviv, Yaakov said to his father, Anochi Esav b'chorecha, I am Esav, your firstborn. Asisi kasher divarte lai, I have done that which you have asked me to do. Kumna, please get up, shva, sit and eat from my food that you should bless me. There are a number of differences in the way the dialogue develops between Yaakov and his father and between Esav and his father. Let's pick up on some of them.
In the first one, he says, who are you, my son?
Excellent. That was the first thing that grabbed me. When Yaakov walks in, Esav's question was, who are you, my son? And here, when Esav walks in, he just says, who are you? What do you think is the difference? I think there's a simple level that we could at least start with.
Simply, he's already seen the one he expected.
Correct. The first one that came in, he's expecting his son. So he would say, who are you, my son? And then the whole experience, he thought that was Esav. Now that there's somebody coming in, this second person must be what? An imposter. So he says, who are you? He doesn't even add the word, who are you, my son? Because whoever you are, you're an imposter. Okay, there's one other very interesting difference in the way the dialogue develops. What does Yaakov say who initiates the conversation when Yaakov walks in and when Esav walks in? In both times it's the same. Who's initiating? It's the son who initiates. How does Yaakov initiate the conversation in verse 17, 18? Or 18, 19?
Did Yaakov always question who was talking to him because he was blind? And usually, if you're blind, you have a more acute hearing, so he wouldn't have been able to tell the difference.
Certainly not, but he clearly wasn't. On voice alone, I would think you're right, but he clearly wasn't. Which might be because he became blind later in life. In other words, that sense of acute hearing we really attribute to, you know, someone who grows up with that. But I don't know. That's just conjecture. I have no idea. But how does Yaakov initiate this dialogue different than Esav?
He's his father.
Right, there's a whole conversation which takes place beforehand. When Yaakov walks in, he says, Avi, he says, father. And Yitzchak responds and says, here I am, hineni. And then Yitzchak says, who are you, my son? When Esav walks in, how does he initiate the dialogue?
Get up.
Get up and eat. Right? There's a little difference, which we have to see, is that significant or not significant. But Yaakov introduces the conversation with father. And Yitzchak responds, hineni. Who are you? Esav walks in and says, eat. To which Yitzchak then responds, who are you? So that Yitzchak's response to Yaakov of who are you is before Yaakov has said, come eat. You know, we're just pointing out some differences as this goes along. Esav walks in and immediately says, get up eat so that you can bless me. So there is no exchange of father, here I am. So that Yitzchak's first response upon his son walking in, after his son already walks in, puts the food down and says, get up, dad, and eat so you can bless me. Yitzchak, excuse me, responds with, who are you? Okay, so far so good?
Well, you could tell like they're both Falcons fans because they said rise up.
Right. Okay, well said. Look at the difference between how Yaakov and Esav, the two brothers, answer the question of who are you. There's a slight nuance there also. They get the same question, who are you? And there's a slight nuanced difference, even though they're really in essence saying the same thing, because they're both answering, I'm Esav. How does Yaakov answer the question to say, I am Esav? In verse 19.
I am your firstborn.
You added a word there.
I am Esav, your firstborn.
Okay, right, there's no I am your son. It's just Anochi Esav Bechorecha. It's three words. It is I, Esav Bechorecha. Esav, your firstborn. Right, it's the word Anochi Esav Bechorecha. Look at the four words, not three, but four that Esav uses.
Very rarely used.
Right, Anochi is we're going to see about that when we have to discuss how Yaakov lied like this, that he used an odd phrase. Esav answers with four words. He says, Ani, Esav, Ani bincha, I am your son, Bechorcha, your eldest, Esav. Ani, I, bincha, your son, Bechorecha, your eldest, Esav. Whereas Yaakov says, Anochi, which is Ani and Anochi are different words. He says, Anochi, we'll have to see when you should use each one. Anochi, Esav Bechorecha. So it's a different order of the phrase and a little different way in terms of how they responded. We'll have to get through all this, but we're just laying all the groundwork. So far, so good? I mean, I know that you notice all of these things every year when we read into the Parsha, so this is really just rehashing, right? These are just, yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Okay, just as reminders. Okay. So the conversation has been fairly straightforward at this point. Esav walks in, says, Dad, get up, here's my food, eat, so that you can bless me, your soul can bless me. Yitzchak responds with, who are you? To which Esav responds, what do you mean, who am I? I am your eldest son, Esav. Now, let's just stop the story for a moment. You're Yitzchak. You're blind. You're dying. And you ask your eldest, your Esav, to come and hunt you game, to prepare it the way that you like it, in order that you shall bless him. Now, whatever your intention was in blessing him, we're going to talk about all of these big things, you want to bless your son, Esav. A couple hours later, less time than you would have thought, someone comes in with the freshly prepared meal. You eat, something is odd, you have this voice of Yaakov, the hands of Esav, you eat, you bless him. He leaves, someone else comes in who sounds exactly the same and says, eat, I've prepared you the way you want it, bless me. You say, who are you? And he says, I'm Esav. You're Yitzchak, having experienced this. Just try to, you know, imagine or like put yourself in that place as to what he's experiencing after this has just taken place. How does the Torah describe it? Lamed Gimel, 33. Vayecharod Yitzchak charada gidola ad me'od. Now, a charada is a trembling. So he trembled a trembling, but not just any trembling. He trembled a trembling that was gidola, that was large, ad me'od. Now, for those of you not familiar with that phrase, it's because the Torah doesn't use it very frequently. A large, enormous, beyond description type of trembling. Because what has just happened to him?
Just been tricked.
Yeah, in a big time way. He was duped. And I don't want to say too much because I don't know exactly what he would be thinking at that point exactly. But what we do know is that the Torah is telling us that this was a major shock to the system. That the trembling was so large, gidola ad ma'od. And what does he say? Vayomer, me, who? Eifo, where? Who hatsod tzayid, who came and hunted game, vayoveli, and brought to me, v'ochal mikol, and I ate from all of it, v'terem tavo, before you came, va'avarchehu, and I have blessed him, gam baruch yihyeh, and indeed he will be blessed. Now, this is a fascinating response. Let's break down Yitzchak's response. He's trembling. He's just realized that he has been duped. I'm assuming that it's safe for us to say that he knows by whom he's been duped. What are our options? You got to go with Yaakov, right? I mean, somebody came who sounded like Esav, who was hairy like Esav. It's most likely not some guy off the street. He's got to sound like Esav. Yaakov is his most likely candidate. Listen to his response. Break down the words that he uses, and let's talk about how Yitzchak responds. What do you find fascinating about the words that he uses?
Well, he shall remain blessed.
Okay, let's start at the end. What's odd about that?
Why couldn't he?
Excellent. Right? Yitzchak concludes his perplexity with, he's going to remain blessed. Wait a minute. Who says? Is it so clear to us that if a person gives a blessing by mistake, I think I'm blessing person A, and it turns out that I'm blessing person B. It sounds like Yitzchak is saying the way blessings work is, the way a blessing works is, that's it. It's done. It's over.
Done.
You know, I gave it, no backsies. It's not like money, which I can hand and take back, which there's something, even though the blessings couldn't have started yet, I mean, he walked out 10 minutes before. He didn't get the fat of the earth. He didn't get the dew of the heavens, the grain, the wine, your sons' mothers will worship you, serve you, prostrate themselves to you. Why is it so obvious to Yitzchak that because he's given the blessings out now, that there's no way to say, well, there's no way that God would bestow the blessings upon somebody who stole these, who took them inappropriately, who I didn't have the intention to give them to. That, for some reason, is not on Yitzchak's radar screen of, well, that was a mistake. It won't happen. But instead, his immediate reaction is, it's done. It's his. I gave them. Finished. I don't know that that's obvious in the world of blessings. I don't give blessings like that. The blessings that I gave on Friday night to my children, I'm just repeating psukim of the Torah. I don't know about these things. Yitzchak is telling us something, which we have two ways to go with this. You have a comment? Let me finish this. It would either be a matter of Yitzchak saying, that's the nature of blessings. There's nothing special about this story. That's how it goes. You will utter them, gone. Never take them back. There's no canceling, there's no deletes, there's no redo button, and he's simply telling us the nature of blessings. That's possibility number one. What would you imagine could be possibility number two? Any guesses?
Well, that he realizes that it was Yaakov, but he purposely wants the blessing. Excellent.
Possibility number two is, that's not how blessings work. If you give a blessing by mistake, you can redo it. You can say to God, whoa, that wasn't supposed to happen. And God himself will say, that wasn't supposed to happen. That's not how it's going to work. But so Yitzchak is telling us not that it's, you know, no backsies. What he's telling us is,
it's okay.
I meant to give it to you, Esav, but because this just happened, and the trembling that I have awakens within me the idea that who indeed really should have gotten these blessings somehow was Yaakov, and therefore he's telling him he will indeed be blessed, not because I said it and I can't take it back, but because something about this story has changed his entire relationship to his two boys. And that when he says to Esav he will indeed be blessed, it's because there's a shift in his thinking. Those are the two possibilities. Either that the blessing, why should he say this here? He'll be blessed. It's exactly 12 hours since I took my 12-hour medication last night for my cough. So you see I'm having trouble. Thank you.
Fill up your glasses for
us. No, I have a little left here. Thank you.
You had this last week.
I did. I had the great pleasure, my mother's in town, Rifki's in Israel now. So my mother's in town, and so she's walking around all day following after me. Take this, here you go, take this. And I had the great pleasure of turning around and saying, what are you, my mother or something? I've really gotten a lot about it. It's been great.
Really?
Okay.
From our story.
What are you, my mother? Yeah.
From our story, you turn around and say,
who are you? Who are you? Your voice sounds like the voice of my wife, but it's my mother. Go. So, what was I just saying? Anyway, so I see two possibilities. There might be a third. In other words, why is he so quick to say, if there was a mistake here, it was by accident, it was swindled out of him, why is he so quick to say, that's it, it's over, it's done, he's going to be blessed? So to me, I have two possibilities, either because that's the way blessings go. I don't know blessings. I don't understand them. As I said last night, I could teach Kabbalah all I want. I don't really know anything about it. So in this world of how the spiritual blessings are passed on from one, I don't know. That's the way it goes. That's what he's teaching us. Or, in my mind, there could be a second possibility in which he's saying, I don't know, I could take it back if I wanted to. I'm telling you, he indeed will be blessed. I'm not moving it. If this is the way that things have gone down, if this is what has happened, then I want it to stay that way. There might be a third possibility. I'm just throwing it out there. That's okay. Excellent. What else about his response is of note?
It seems detailed. Why does he list every step?
Excellent. Okay, it's very detailed. And there's at which point, I have one phrase that's really troubling to me. Which is the phrase that you think is the most detailed?
Who hunted game?
Excellent. That's what I was thinking. What a strange thing I thought that he would include that. What's he bothered by, Yitzchak? He's bothered by... Somebody swindled me. Somebody came in here and pretended to be Esav, right? Mm-hmm. So how does he say that? Hey, who is that who hunted... where are you going back to that? He got that. I don't care if he went to the farm and picked up an animal or he hunted the game. It just seems much more detail-oriented in using the phrase that you did in terms of his shock, as opposed to simply saying what I would have thought if I were scripting this. Who fooled me? Who was that? But he lists it. Who hunted the game and brought it to me? And I ate it before you came. Please, what? That's not dramatic enough. That he, why is he repeating all of those things? Do you have an answer? Question.
It reminds me of when he first gave the instructions to Asa.
Very detail-oriented. Yeah. Okay, very good. So Dina's pointing out, and as much as it's a question here, Yitzchak did the same thing when he commanded Esav and said, go to your shed, take out your weapons, sharpen them, go to the field, and hunt me again. They're like, Esav is the pro here, right? Just place your order. Well done, rare or medium. He'll take care of everything else. And it's very detail-oriented. What do both of these instances, I'm glad you pointed that out, what do both of these instances point us to? Not at once. Not all at once. I'll give a general answer. I'm asking something very general. You don't have to be deep and Kabbalistic. What does it point us to? It's important. There's something here about the process more than just the food. It's just my suggestion. It seems to me, I'll say it is nothing more than it seems to me as I'm reading this, both of those instances they just strike me as Yitzchak Avinu. We're talking about our forefather Yitzchak. Twice now in this story, seems to get very involved in who hunted the game. When he asks Esav for the food, he gives him a very detailed set of instruction. And now when he's been fooled, instead of just saying, I was fooled, who was that? He takes us through that process again. Who was it who hunted that game? Brought it to me and that I ate. So it just sounds to me that as much as we've asked the big elephant in the room, there were two ones, one of them was, what's with the food? Why is food such an integral part of this whole story? We can almost expand that. Not only does it seem to be the actual food, but it's the hunting of the game they're preparing. I'll throw this out in a more modern day equivalent. Let's just say the food was really important. Would there be any difference between, in a modern day scenario, of my saying to my son, you know, I need a good meal before I can bless you. Call up Broadway and order my favorite and bring it to me, versus go get the ingredients, I want you to make it. Is there a difference between I need food to bless, so go get it for me, versus I need you to make me the food that I like so that I can eat and bless. This story implies to me, just reading it through, that it's not just that I need good food, I need you to be the one to go sharpen your tools, hunt the game, prepare it the way that I like it, and I will eat it. Because he says it twice. He doesn't just tell Esav to do it, and then when he's shocked here, he says, well, then who was the one who hunted the game, brought it to me, and I ate it? Who was that? So it just sounds that way. We'll see if we can get back to that and put them to that. Yeah.
Once again, I keep thinking of a Kenyan where you need an action to actually form
affect agreement. The transfer of something.
So to affect the transfer of the bracha, he needed Esav to do an action.
Excellent. Okay, so you'd be giving a suggestion or an answer already that somehow the transference of the blessing requires a very active participation of the blessed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that would be true, I'm not sure we're going to find that in all the stories through Chumash. For example, let's say I'm just thinking of Yosef's sons, Ephraim and Menashe, who receive a blessing from Yaakov on his deathbed. What do they do? They just show up, and they get blessed. Yaakov switches his hands, but we certainly don't find anything like that. So you might be right, and if you are, so then why is it only here? It would be an interesting thing. I don't remember, as I'm just trying to scan through the stories of Chumash, do we find this elsewhere in blessings where there's such an elaborate process before the blessing is given? Like we do here, it doesn't seem as common. I'm going to get back to about two others along the way.
Well, I was going to say, here it says, I partook of all.
Excellent. Okay. Not only does it say, is he detail-oriented, and he says, and I partook of all of his food. Now, what do you think all of his food means?
The bread and the wine.
Okay, so it can mean, again, I'm thinking two possibilities. One is, I really ate all of it. I licked my plate. Mm-hmm. One possibility. Or unless it means these additional things, I only asked him to make meat. And what does Yaakov actually bring?
Yeah.
We know bread and wine. Bread, which was given to him by his mother, which had never been mentioned before, and wine, which Yaakov himself seems to have added to the menu. So I don't know if when Yitzchak says, and I partook of all of it, does he mean, I ate all the meat? And then we have to ask, what's the difference? Let's say he left over a piece. What does it matter to us? Do we need to know how much Yitzchak ate? Or does it mean that there's this bread-wine thing, which we've been asking about, why does that keep popping up? There's something significant, and he includes that. I ate all of it. Not only did I eat the meat, I had the bread and the wine, too. Excellent point. Somehow that's there also. Yeah?
I'm just thinking that Esav was the one that hunted for his father regularly.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess his mentor was to also do the cooking.
Okay.
So maybe, I don't know if that has any bearing on that.
I don't either, but it's a good point. That was certainly Esau's thing to do the cooking.
Yeah, I mean that was his thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say the opposite. Maybe it wasn't his thing to do that, and that Esau was asking him, "I want you to do specific mitzvahs for me before you get the bracha. Just show me where you are and who you are." Back
mm-hmm.
to the question, "Who are you?"
Excellent.
And then on the second time,
Hold on a second. Let me just stay there. Notice it. You're pointing out that. In answer to why is he so detail-oriented in giving Esav instructions, you're giving us another possibility that it wasn't the nature of blessings that I need to see you do something. It's that in this particular relationship in which Yitzchak has his doubts about where does Esav stand in the picture, he's saying to him, do things for me, and I'm sort of going to use it as a litmus test just to see where you are. Possibility, very interesting, yeah?
And then the second time when he's replaying everything,
mm-hmm.
if he already is understanding that this is Yaakov, he's asking himself more, how could he go out and do this? This is not the guy who sits in tents.
It's like a rhetorical question. How was it that Yaakov went out and hunted game?
Another side I haven't seen before.
Okay, interesting. There's one other point in this pasuk that no one's pointed out, which to me was the first thing that jumped out at me, in Yitzchak's response there. In his beginning of his comments, what does he say there? Me, Afo, who, where? How does that read to you?
Confused.
Totally confused. Like which word? Who? Where? What? Like, it reads as a who? Where? What?
Where did it come from?
Like that double, like the who, the where. just sort of that reads as that sense of a little bit of perplexed, as if Vayacharad Charado Gidola Ad Ma'od. Okay, so I think we did justice to that pasuk as far as raising some of the issues. Yeah?
Yeah.
So let's move on. So now you're Esav, right? Let's get back into Esav's head. You have no idea what's going on. You don't know any of this story. You're not part of this equation. You don't know that Rivka pulled over your other brother and did the whole thing, and then he ate already. You are happy-go-lucky, heading to the field to fulfill your father's command to receive the blessing. You come in, you're all ready to go, and as soon as you walk in, your father says to you, "Who are you?" And you say, "What do you mean, who am I? I'm your oldest son, Esav." And then you see your father turn white. And you have no idea, he goes white in front of you. I'm thinking, what happened? And then your father says, "Who? Where? Was the one who came and hunted game for me, brought it to me, and I ate from all of it, and I blessed him. And he will be blessed." And you're Esav, and you hear that now, like this out of the blue. His response, says the Torah, 34, Lamed Daled, Kishmoa Esav es divrei aviv. When Esav heard the words of his father, Vayitzak tzaka gidola umara ad ma'od. He cried an exceedingly great and bitter cry. Almost the same phrase that we find by Yitzchak's trembling, except it's even worse. It's not Gidola ad Ma'od, it's Gidola Umara. It's great and bitter. Esav lets out a bitter cry. If this phrase is familiar to you, it's because in the Megillah, that we'll read Mirtz Hashem in less than 2 weeks, when Mordechai hears the decree that the Jews are going to be wiped out, he puts on his sackcloth, he goes out to the streets. Vayizak za'aka gidola umara. Also a bitter cry, but it's not ad ma'od. So the Torah almost describes this as even with additional greatness, even more than what Mordechai is described as. So Esav is, I don't know if I would say broken, but certainly very emotionally responsive to this. As if he sees that there was something of great significance which took place. If you remember his response when Yaakov said, "Sell me your birthright." Right? What did he say? Anochi holech lamus, I am going to die. Lama zali b'chora, what do I need this birthright for? Very disparaging. And here, when the actual blessing is taken from under him, there is a massive response, a za'akol gidolau mara ad ma'od, a great and bitter cry that comes out from him. Vayomer lo aviv, and he says to his father, if you again, I'm sure you already read it, but if you would stop here and you would say, what would be the first words that you would think would come out of Esav's mouth? And you're scripting a play, you're writing this out. And Esav walks in and says to his father, "Here, I brought the stuff." And his father looks at him and says, "What is this? Who came in here just a few minutes ago?" And Esav lets out this primordial, emotional response, this bitter cry. And then he says, what would you think would be his response?
"Who did this?"
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. "I'm going to kill him."
I would say that's not fair.
Right? Right? I would have thought it would be something along the lines of, who did this, he really knows who did it. Because what's the only option? Mm-hmm. It's Yaakov. Highly unlikely that somebody else would have known what's going on here, would have snuck in and fooled their father to think that it was Esav. Yaakov is your prime suspect number one. Your one and only suspect. So I would have thought that the response of Esav would have been along the lines of, "Who did this?" Meaning to say, "I'm going to kill him." Mm-hmm. And what does he say? "Barcheni gam ani avi." Bless me also, my father.
That's so sad.
This is a very interesting response. It's a very, very, very fascinating thing we're going to have to study. Esav, our wicked Esav, lets out this emotional cry of something lost, this bitter, tear-filled cry, and the first words out of his mouth are not a vengeful, I'm going to kill him, that's not fair, but they are a, as Elaine said, a sad, bless me too, Dad. Avi, he uses that language. Bless me too, Dad. Now read this story with this. Continues Yitzchak Vayomer. Yitzchak responds, Bo Achicha b'mirma, your brother came with cleverness, Vayikach birchasecha, and he took it. He took your blessing. So whereas Esav responds with, Dad, give me a blessing, and Yitzchak responds, your brother came with cleverness and he took your blessing. That which would have been yours is now his. Now again, remember, over the two responses that we had, the two possibilities, when Yitzchak said, and he indeed will be blessed, we had two possibilities. Either just, I'm sorry, it's just the way it goes. Once it's done, once it's done, there's nothing that I can do about it, which would be this, a sense of, he got you, there's nothing that I can do about it, I'm really sorry, versus I want him to have it. That he pulled this off says a lot to me about what's gone on over the last 40, 50 years, about who the two of you are, and I'm going to leave it. Now, whichever way we'll read that will tell us how to read this phrase, when Yitzchak says, your brother came with cleverness and took your blessing. Do we again read that as, I'm so sorry, there's nothing that I can do. He came in, he took it, once it leaves my mouth, I can't take it back, it's done. Or was it a statement of, your brother has come with cleverness and he took your blessing, that, and I'm giving it to him now, that he was able to do this shows me that, yeah, he took it, he took it, and I'm leaving it with him because of what he did. So I had to exactly read the tone into Yitzchak's response. We'll sort of have to sort of see how we'll read through this. But we have here this dialogue in which Esav is saying, bless me, Dad, I want another one. And Yitzchak says, your brother took it. He came with cleverness and he took your blessing. The clear indication is, and I'm not giving you another one. Because I can't? Or because I won't? Because it's his now. Now Yitzchak, for the, all that we know, has no idea that Yaakov has purchased the birthright from our previous episode. Nor do we see, as, yes, I should say, we're about to read the next verse. But at this point, in these responses that Yitzchak has given of, indeed he will be blessed, and this response of, he came with cleverness and he took your blessings, at this point there is no reason in the world for us to assume that Yitzchak knows that there's been a purchase. And he still says twice, it's done. I don't know, I don't yet know which way to read it, because I can't take it back, or I won't take it back. But twice, without knowing that it's been sold, Yitzchak has already said, it's his. Comments, questions on this puzzle, or keep going? Well, I have one comment. There's something missing in verse 35 that we've been pointing out exists everywhere.
He said to his son?
Yeah.
No?
The relationship.
Where?
Your brother.
Well, that we've seen everywhere, but there's a relationship missing in this verse. In the very first word, what, according to the pattern that we've seen every other place in this story, what should it have said?
My son.
And he said to his son, your brother has come. But it doesn't say that. It only says, and he says, isn't that interesting? Relationship, 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 relationship. That's all we've seen. Every time there's a dialogue, anything that's happened, the Torah goes out of its way to repeat over and over again that the two parties involved have a relationship. It's to a mother, it's to a brother, it's to a father, it's to a son. And here where Yitzchak says, your brother took it with trickery or deception, cleverness, it's his. It does not say that Yitzchak said to his son, it just says, Yitzchak said, your brother came and took it, it's his. What does that tell you? What does it imply?
That he was okay with it.
It certainly would lend itself to Yitzchak seeing in what's going on that while there might have been two brothers who had potential to be part of the dynasty, there is, it sounds to me definitely like this pulling away. That's the Torah narrating to us. Now it's just, I said, the whole story is I'm talking to my son, my son's talking to his father, it's a mother, there's always that relationship. And here when Yitzchak says, your brother came and took it, it's just, and he said. We're missing that phrase of libino, which we've seen so many other times. Here we do not have that. Very interesting. Okay, let's go on. 36, Lamed Vav. Now here's Esav's response. Now again, let's put ourselves back in Esav's shoes. Esav has this very emotional response, this cry, this terrible, bitter cry, and he says that which we would not have expected. He says, bless me, Dad. Not revenge, but bless me. To that, Yitzchak comes down hard and says, no. Your brother came with cleverness and took it. Shop is closed. And now Esav responds with, Vayomer, Hachi Karoshimo Yaakov. Is it because his name was called Yaakov, V'yakveni Zeh Pomayim, that he has now outwitted me, fooled me, swindled me twice? Es Bechorasi Lokach. He took away my birthright, V'hine Ata, and behold now, Birchasi, Lokach Birchasi, he is taking my blessing as well. Now this should be the first time that Yitzchak is hearing about the sale of the birthright.
If this was said out loud.
If this was even said out loud. Excellent. It does not say Vayomer El Aviv. It doesn't say that Esav said this to his father. It just says that Esav said it. So it certainly gives us the indication that it was to his father, but that's certainly a possibility that he was just sort of saying this to himself. But let's go through his words. Now he says what we would have expected him to say, which was more directed towards his brother. Then look at, his name is called Yaakov. Now why was he named Yaakov again?
Well, he was holding onto his heel.
Holding onto his heel. We had that explicit. That was in episode number one. And we mentioned that the word Akev had a double meaning. It meant heel. And it also meant, so first pointed out, we saw this in the first episode, some type of swindling or switching. Because right at the very end, at the heel, you think it's going one way, and everything switches. So here, Esav uses that language to say, they called him Yaakov, which we know why he was really called Yaakov, because he was holding on to Esav's heel, but he's using it on Vayakveni, and he has swindled me, he has outwitted me now twice. He took my birthright, and now he's taking my blessings. Now, this is very interesting from any point. Would we have said that Yaakov swindled Esav for the birthright? Did he outwit him?
Yeah.
Well, we can debate it. I mean, there was a sale. There was a dialogue. We know that Esav was starving.
Right.
He said, I'm going to die. And we saw the commentators didn't prefer the opinion that I'm going to die right now, but that I'm going to die either in the field hunting, or I'm going to die before Dad dies and I won't get anything from the inheritance anyway, or Rashi's Midrashic interpretation, I'm going to die, me and my descendants having to abide by the laws of the Beis HaMikdash anyway. So there was some type of dialogue, and he eventually says, I'll sell it. And here he defines himself as having been outwitted in that sale. What else is of note in the way that Esav is viewing what's taking place? And he says, there were two things that happened. I was outwitted in the sale, and now he has taken my blessings. What would be another way to have looked at this? This is a possibility. Are these two separate things, or does one flow from the other?
He sold the birthright willingly.
Yeah.
Right?
The blessing was taken from him.
Okay. I have a train of thought, which I'm just curious if anybody is following it along.
Oh, I mean, the firstborn is the one that is the head of the
right.
family.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. I was thinking, wait a minute. If Yaakov really bought the birthright, who should have received this blessing anyway of physical produce as well as national prominence, and then that your brother should serve you? Shouldn't that have been the one who's holding the birthright?
Yeah.
Or
the oldest.
Right, no, the oldest who is naturally entitled to it, and then the oldest sold it. So it's interesting that Esav, at least, now he doesn't know what the blessing was. He wasn't there to know that it was, you know, he doesn't know what it was.
How is it actually physically possible to sell a birthright?
Okay, so that was, we asked that question in episode one. I don't know if you remember, Refersh asked that question. How are you allowed to sell an actual, like, what are you selling?
That's really
so he answered that it was the prominence of the firstborn, that you can sell the right to be the inheritor of the family's, you know, leadership role. That's a valid question. What does it mean to sell a birthright? But that was done. I would have thought that the blessing that was given would somehow have flowed from Esav. Why did Yitzchak want to bless Esav in the first place? Was it because he was his firstborn and he thought that therefore he was entitled to certain blessings, or that he earned it? I don't know. What I'm pointing out is I would have made an argument that the holder of the firstborn, that right, would be naturally entitled to these blessings. So that Esav wouldn't say, I've been outwitted twice, but that I was outwitted once, and this is a manifestation of that. And we see not that way. We see that Esav holds that he's been outwitted twice, which in reality has happened because Yaakov had to dress up and steal the blessing. So he clearly is actively outwitting him here a second time. And that's what Esav is saying. So let me rephrase the question. When Rivka, and with this we'll end for today, when Rivka calls her son Yaakov inside and says, you're not going to believe what I just heard. Your dad wants to give Esav the blessing. Right? He wants to bless him before he dies. Rivka clearly thought this was a significant blessing that Esav was going to get, and that it can't go down that way. We need to get it. Here, do the following. Go into the flock, take the two goats, I'm going to make them, you'll dress up as Esav, you'll swindle me. Yaakov says, this is a crazy plan, he's going to ask to feel me, I'm going to get caught, I'm going to get curses instead of blessings. And she says, I take them upon myself, do as I say. And he says, okay. My question, why doesn't Yaakov say to his mother, hey, wait a minute, Mom, wait a minute. 40 years ago, when Zaidi Avraham died, Esav came back from the field and he was famished. I bought the birthright. Here's the shtar. Here's the documentation. We don't need to do this. Let me go into Dad. I'll read him the document. I will read that Esav signed it. We'll bring in, you know, the witnesses. And I'll get the blessings. So why does Yaakov go through with all of this and not claim that he's entitled to it because of his rights? Clearly, he doesn't. Clearly, he feels the fact that he bought it does not entitle him to it. And he goes along with what is a very dangerous plan because he might end up with curses instead of blessings. And now Esav says, he did it to me twice. First he stole my birthright, and now he's outwitting me when it comes to these blessings. Also viewing it as, in Esav's mind, the fact that he sold the birthright, who was entitled to this blessing? He was. It has nothing to do with that. He doesn't see it as, you know, he stole my birthright, and no, he really got what he deserved. No, two separate things. He stole my birthright, and now he did it again. This should have been mine. So clearly, when we ask ourselves that question, how did you sell a birthright? And what's entitled or included in the birthright? It seems like it does not include these blessings. Does that make sense? That's what it seems like. It could have gone the other way. If you would have told me that it did include the blessings, I would have said, yeah, of course, that's what it means to sell the birthright.
Was it official shtar that they had?
I don't know if they had a documentation or not, but it seems clear that whatever needed to happen in a halachic sale happened. It was sold, he gave him the food, he got the birthright. And whatever that entitled him to does not include the blessings that Yitzchak was about to give. We'll have to keep that in mind when we go through the story, as we're working it through now, churning our way through it. when we scale back and answer all of these big elephant in the room questions as to what was Yitzchak intending to give the blessing, why did he want to give Esav a blessing, what was he planning on giving Esav a blessing, whatever this blessing is, it seems it was a blessing which would be independent and separate from the birthright blessing, because no, it does not flow in the story that Yaakov was somehow entitled to this blessing because of his buying the birthright, but that he needed to steal it. He never says in the story, wait a minute, I bought this, this is mine. He doesn't say that. And Esav at the end of the story doesn't say, oh man, that's, I forgot. He says, he did it to me twice now. And it seems like a separate independent entity. So we'll leave with that question. We still got a lot to go just to finish the story. And then we're going to go through all the commentaries. So we got a lot to do in the story, but it is quite a fascinating story, as I'm hoping you are enjoying going through. I know it's just review from the Parsha of the Week every year. We wouldn't read it to keep pick up on all these things. But okay, we'll see you next week, Meretz Hashem. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.